Checkerfin.
Fordham is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly
sex,
show.
Sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
in your face, in your face, in your face.
Listen to your word that baby preaching, cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the education.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. Here with my co-host, a man who just might win the next Republican primary. Rick Hess.
Hey, big guy.
How you doing, Rick?
Doing good. Doing better than the Republican field.
It is scrambled. So what do you think? Is this going to go to the convention?
Unlikely.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah? You think so?
Yeah, you know, because it's all those, it's delegate selection rules, right? Somebody will come out of Super Tuesday with a big chunk of delegates, and other people start, you know, Fred Thompson will go back to, well, I'm not sure what he's been doing for the last 3 months, but whatever, he'll do the same nothing that he's been doing, and somebody else will fold up the tent.
You know what I think would be great is if Fred Thompson and Arnold Schwarzenegger did a movie together. You know, like ex-politicians as sort of a theme.
With Jesse Ventura?
Nice, yes.
There you go.
Yes, we can look forward to that. And how many more years for the gubernator? Couple, till he's out of office?
What, 09?
I guess so, something like that. Yeah,
yeah, baby.
Alrighty. Well, I should tell our listeners we are broadcasting from our brand new podcasting studio at the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation's brand new offices on 16th Street, White House, right down the street. What do you think, Rick? You feel pretty good? You liking the vibe?
Liking the vibe.
Supposedly, this is a soundproof room, except we just heard the garbage truck go by. So I guess maybe it's not. Yeah. But listeners, hope you can enjoy the acoustics. And if you have anything to tell us about that, send us a note at letters@edexcellence.net. Let's get started. We got a busy day. We are going to play a game of Pardon the Gadfly, and then Liam will impart some education news of the weird. Sound good?
Wow. Wow. That is a busy day.
Christina, let's get started.
Number one, Paul Barton at ETS has a new analysis out arguing that we don't need as many college graduates as many reformers claim. There's little evidence, he says, that our economy can make good use of a sharp increase in college-educated workers. Should we ease back on the, quote, everyone a college graduate talk?
Sure. I mean, it's funny because the labels that we use, right, completion of high school, attending some college, graduating college, these are labels which don't have any intrinsic meaning. What it means to get a high school education has changed its meaning over the course of the last 100, 150 years. The notion that everybody needs to graduate college is partly a presumption that we're not teaching them the skills and giving them the exposure and giving them the liberal education they need in K-12. Particularly if we delivered a much more effective K-12 education, then instead of assuming, geez, we need to do that so that we can send lots and lots more people to college, college might actually be less essential for folks because they had the exposure to the broad-based education and they were able to develop the skills they needed.
So who is it that you don't want to send to college, Rick? Is it poor children?
No, it's mostly, your children. It's mostly Nico. In fact, I want to see if I can't get a no Nico allowed sign hung up.
Ouch, that really hurts, Rick. That really hurts.
But
Rick, you know, so Paul Barton makes his whole case based on the economy. He says, look, the economy is not prepared to absorb a lot more college graduates. We don't need a lot more college graduates. That's not where the jobs are going to be, even though the conventional wisdom says otherwise. That's fine and dandy, but there are other reasons to go to college.
Sure, you know? There are.
I mean, you know, it's good to have a broadly educated population.
Except, one, huge numbers of college attendees actually aren't getting a broad education, right? Millions are going to two-year colleges or branches of state institutions, primarily for vocational or functional education. They're not getting a lot of enriched exposure. The other thing here is that we hear consistently about the high cost of college, about the burden it places on folks. So a lot of parties in this debate are being somewhat disingenuous when they talk about how essential it is to send everyone to college. And then when these people talk about how college is a price burden, they expect the taxpayers to pick up the tab. If college is not essential, if college is an option, then what it ought to be is it ought to be an option that's chosen by people for whom it's going to be effective and useful and improve their quality of life. And that should not be selected based on socioeconomic status. But it doesn't mean that we ought to try to push as many bodies as possible into something called higher education.
All right. This said by a man who's had, 10 years of higher education?
Whew. Yep. Oof. Yeah, nobody said that hypocrisy was a disqualifying characterization. Mm-hmm.
Next up, Manhattan Institute writer Saul Stern declares this month that school choice is not enough and sides with instructionists over incentivists in arguing that what really matters is the curriculum. Rick, which side are you on?
Well, this month is school choice is not enough, and last month was school choice is too much month. I'm just kidding. Look, I think he's actually creating something of a false dichotomy here. I think actually several folks who talk about instruction in the context of choice debate are. Choice has been oversold, unfortunately, by its proponents. Mechanisms like incentives and markets are not answers. All they are is mechanisms which create the opportunity for smart, dynamic problem solvers to come up with better solutions. Part of a better solution, and when you're talking about K-12 education, is always and obviously going to relate to instruction and pedagogy and curriculum.
Okay. All right, but let's turn this on its head, Rick. I mean, the other question is then, do you need choice at all? I mean, Diane Ravitch would argue, and she argued basically in Saul Stern's piece and in a debate last year at the CRET Task Force, that you don't need choice at all, that if you had a school district, for example, that had a very strong curriculum and they had a way to make sure that the schools use that curriculum with a great deal of fidelity, that you would probably get very good results. And that system would outperform some sort of market system where there's people teaching all sorts of things willy-nilly. So the question isn't just even, is school choice enough? The fundamental question is, do we even need school choice?
Sure. I mean, and right. And if we actually want to take the market presumption seriously, this was the argument that was made in good faith, of course, by central planners throughout the course of the 20th century. There are good reasons, good theoretical reasons, why somebody might imagine that a centrally planned economy is going to massively outperform as chaotic and imperfect a market economy as, say, the U.S. has offered. And through the course of the past century and a half, those, you know, thoughtful, intellectually kind of grounded efforts to come up with good central planning of solutions have generally been outperformed by the messy, chaotic, imperfect markets simply because the world is not as predictable or readily managed as the instructionist would like it to be.
All right. Well, one last word is just to say that I do think it's a false dichotomy. And I think the way forward is to have some sort of common understanding of what kids should learn, vis-a-vis standards and even a standard curriculum possibly, but let schools differentiate around culture, around values, around management approaches, around the way they deal with teachers, etc. But the content itself in our democratic society, I think, should be the same.
Well,
that was the last word.
Hey, that's not an unreasonable postulate, babe.
All right.
Only 5 minutes over. All right. Dallas Independent School District is home to a rash of scandals. As the Morning News reported, there was the assistant principal who had students and teachers build a king-size bed for him in shop class, and the football coach who secretly had students sell donated T-shirts, and the cafeteria boss who investigators say stole hundreds of dollars worth of dessert cobbler. From her school.
Hey, yeah, you want a hot dessert cobbler?
Yeah, and this isn't even education news of the weird. I mean, you know, but it's pretty weird. Yes.
The superintendent has created an office of personal responsibility to find out about these sorts of shenanigans and shut them down. Is this a worthwhile effort?
So does AEI have an office of personal responsibility, Rick?
That's a darn good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not even entirely sure where our human resources office is.
So. I mean, don't you sit right next to Paul Wolfowitz? And didn't he get caught up in a big scandal when he was at the World Bank?
Mm.
I think you guys should think about one. No, so, this is classic bureaucratic response to a problem like this, right? I mean, I think the newspaper and other people unearthed some scandals happening in Dallas. I'm sure there's all sorts of scandals happening in lots of big city districts. Obviously, they should be rooted out. The trick is not overreacting and not reacting by just piling on more red tape and more regulations. Somehow you got to create transparency and a culture, where people are held accountable if they get caught doing this stuff. But you don't want to create all of a sudden a million new rules to try to anticipate the next time somebody builds a king size bed for their shop teacher.
Dude, somebody stole peach cobbler.
Yes.
Hundreds of dollars worth of peach cobbler.
Yeah.
Are you just going to let that go? Yeah. You just want to let that happen?
I think the problem is that we have, McDonald's is promoting for years the Hamburglar, which sends a confusing message to kids that maybe it's okay to steal food.
But these are adults.
Yes. Well, I think maybe they never grew up. No, of course, it's a big problem. I mean, this is, yes, we should not look the other way when people steal peach cobbler. Mm-hmm. But I am concerned that there might be new rules and procedures put into place that are bureaucratic and that are mindless that are going to just gum up the system.
Wait a minute. It was just last year that you wanted new rules and procedures regarding three or four different things.
Like
good
what?
Golly.
Like
I don't what? Know. There was something. What the hell was it? Liam?
You know, we don't have to be consistent from year to year.
That's true. I'm feeling it's a fresh air, fresh policies. It's a little bit like content standards, though, huh? Just some consistent content-driven rules and procedures, and then let providers operate within those. But let's note, though, that these appear to be public employees. These are not even, right? These are not nefarious private characters.
Yes.
These are folks who have been met, you know, have been hired by the current district in power, which is just interesting.
Yeah. So just fire those people and get on with it.
Fenty would.
That's right. He would. He would. Okay. Well, it is now that special time. The time we wait for all week long. Education news of the weird time. With our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, besides the peach cobbler getting stolen, what is weird this week?
Republican State Senator John Loudon of Missouri is sick of seeing CE and BCE everywhere he goes, which is why he has filed a bill that would mandate the use of BC, before Christ, and AD, Anno Domini, or Year of Our Lord, after calendar dates. The bill has been filed as a constitutional amendment and would make BC and AD the, quote, official dating standard, unquote, of Missouri. And would also bar state and public employees from using any other system in official capacities. Ron Calzone, a leader of Missouri First, which is a nonprofit group that advocates for local control and teaches about Christianity's role in government, supports the bill. Calzone said laws should preserve Missouri's heritage and traditions, which includes using BC and AD, quote, it's kind of like hot dogs and apple pie, Calzone said. Rick, if you would have to do without either hot dogs or apple pie for the rest of your AD days, which would you forego?
Hmm.
And that's education news of the weird.
That's a darn good question. You know, it just strikes me as a lot of psychic energy to invest in the notation that you use after dates.
Right. I'm more upset about Liam's pronunciation of the state, Missouri. You know, I grew up in Missouri. And I have to say, in the St. Louis area, in the more cosmopolitan parts of Missouri, we call it Missouri.
Yeah, I heard Jim Lehrer, though, on the news hour say Missouri, and so I made a special effort to say Missouri.
Mike.
Because I thought that was sort of the folksy way to go about it.
That's interesting. That's like NPR trying to show their roots in
America. He was in the Marines.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mike, in your Missouri capacity there, so this official dating standard of Missouri, is that why you're no longer in the state? Or did you have trouble with the official dating standard?
Well, it's not yet the official dating standard. I mean, you know, right now it sounds like until this law passes.
Oh, the official dating standard relates to the BC and AD? Oh, I thought that was about like your ability to take a gal out for a cocktail.
Right, right.
I got confused.
Yeah.
Lost in the lingo.
Take her out for some apple pie.
Mm.
Wow.
Mm. Well, hot dogs or apple pie? I prefer hot dogs to apple pie myself.
Yeah, yeah. I'd go for the apple pie myself. Really? I think it's healthier. It's got apples in it. It's a fruit.
The crust is horrible for you. And it depends on the condiments, too. Like, if we're just talking straight up hot dog, not no dressing.
Yeah.
But if you got relish, you got mustard, I'd go hot dog over.
Much less a chili dog.
Mm-hmm. Mm,
so, Liam, any idea whether this law is actually going to become, this bill is going to become law? I mean, is this just a stunt?
No idea. No idea.
Okay, well, let us know next week.
Yeah, sure.
You can, okay. You know, do some research.
That's not the weird part.
Some policy analysis.
No.
Yeah.
Fordham, known for its stringent and methodical analysis of these issues.
Yes. Well, that's pretty weird. That's pretty weird. All
right. Not just glib and easy cheap shots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rick. Well, that is all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week from our brand new studios. Until then,
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.